Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
Indeed it is. Minister Tracy Martin joins us again this week, and we spoke for a long time yet again, touching on new entrenched support for the teaching of the health and sexuality curriculum in schools, which basically secures funding for 40 people to go in and do this to ensure consistency across the curriculum and throughout all schools. Now, we didn't have the time to play that today, but there are more announcements in the wing, so we can try cover that again later, perhaps when we talk to her again. Today, though, we talk about COVID-19 quarantine mishaps and also the delay in the sexual violence legislation bill. I started by asking the minister if the quarantine mishaps could have been avoided.
Oh yeah, it could have been avoided. So I think it's really interesting. I was listening to Todd Muller on the radio this morning, and again, you know, it's becoming quite constant that they just call for a minister to resign or step down or something. But I want to just run through this. So I'm a minister. Like, let's talk about the Prime Minister. So the Prime Minister, we sit in Cabinet, and we get a paper from Health, and we've done all of our COVID, all of the COVID processes and procedures and so on have been based on advice from Dr. Ashley Bloomfield and the Ministry of Health. So we get a Cabinet paper from Health, and it says we can manage the borders by bringing people in, but we put them into managed isolation, managed quarantine, and we will keep them there for this period of days, and we will test them on this day and that day, right?
Yeah.
So that's what the Cabinet gets, and that's what the Cabinet agrees to. And then the Cabinet on multiple occasions gets reports that, yes, that's exactly what's happening. And the public gets on multiple occasions in public statements, yes, that's exactly what's happening. And then you go down the line, so we're sitting up here in the Cabinet office, because I don't think anybody expects the Prime Minister to be going into a quarantine unit to actually do COVID testing, do they? Well, she's not qualified to do it, I would tell you that.
Right.
So, nor should David Clark. He's not qualified to do COVID testing either. So there is a contract that was the Ministry of Health contracted out to an organisation to be in these quarantine facilities and to deliver the protocol, to do what the Cabinet told them to do, which was keep them there and test them. What's happened is, at that street level, somebody, a few people, somehow the message from the top of the tree to the bottom of the tree actually got muddled up, and where we knew, we were told it was mandatory, somehow they thought it was voluntary, and so they asked people if they would, or didn't do it. Now, that's what happened. That's literally what happened. So as soon as we found out about it, one, were we angry just like the rest of New Zealand? Absolutely we were angry, because we had been given an assurance. And we, just like the rest of New Zealand, you know, spent time in isolation, and we know what it's done to our economy. So, yeah, we were mad. But at the end of the day, we can go on a witch hunt for the person who, right down at the bottom of the, at the front line, who didn't do the job they were asked to do, or we can sort it out and move on. And we're going to sort it out, and we moved on, and that's why we put the Defence Force in there.
Okay, so when you say we sort it out and we move on, how is it being sorted out in the sense that, yes, you've got this new level of, I suppose, discipline and authority in that space, but how do we kind of make sure that, if it comes from, like, exemptions and those sorts of things? I know that's been taken off the table, but...
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, first of all, it is, you put Defence in charge, and already we are hearing from people inside the quarantine units that the moment Defence was in charge, everything changed. Everything became much more structured. There was, two or three, twice the number of people monitoring them and that sort of thing. So that's the first thing, you put Defence in charge. I think the next thing that the country we need to take a breath and take on board. We never said, the government never said that we wouldn't see cases of COVID in New Zealand, right? We always knew that we would see other cases. And part of the work that we were doing over the five-week period of lockdown was actually making sure that the systems were in place for contact tracing and testing. So even if we take those two women, what has the system been able to do? As soon as we knew there was a problem, the system went out and within 48 hours contact traced up to at least 300 people. They've got the capacity to test them, they've got the capacity to self-isolate them, they've got the capacity, and we have the hospital capacity that if somebody was to get sick and need hospital care and ventilators, we have that capacity. So that was always part of the what was going on behind the scenes, was making sure we had the capacity and the systems in place should we get COVID cases. And we still don't have community transfer. We know absolutely where every one of these COVID cases has come from. That's part. That means that the system that was set in place is working. But we always knew that, you know, the border is our risk. We knew we would have COVID cases. We needed to make sure we had a system in place to deal with those cases.
Mm. Just lastly on this topic, then, the leader of New Zealand First has been pushing for a Trans-Tasman bubble. Mm. What do these mishaps sort of mean for that? Is that going to be pushed out, or?
Well, I mean, you know, the Right Honourable Winston Peters has always said, you know, as soon as we can. And as soon as we can is when it's safe, right? And what we've just seen with Victoria, for example, I'm pretty sure it's Victoria I'm talking about, we've just seen their community transfer sort of elevate slightly. So it's not just us that we have to, you know, try and make sure that we maintain and know and be confident about the lack of community transfer. It's obviously Australia as well. So there was no actual set date for a Trans-Tasman bubble. It is very dependent on both nations being at a place where we're confident that we know if we have COVID cases, we know where it's come from and we can instantly control it.
And so when do we know that, though? When is the point that we are safe?
Well, I think from our perspective, we haven't got community transfer. So from New Zealand's perspective, we're in a very good space. I mean, this has been a blip in the road and we're going to have to rebuild confidence now. So we're going to need to rebuild confidence and make sure that, you know, the New Zealand public and if we want a Trans-Tasman bubble, the Australians believe that we have got our quarantine system under control. But on the flip side of that, the New Zealand public needs confidence that the Australians haven't got community transfer. So at the moment, they're actually a little bit behind us.
Okay. So to finish, I wanted to talk about the sexual violence legislation bill. It was in the news yesterday that it seems that New Zealand First is holding this up. What do you say to that?
Well, I've asked for it to be slowed down. That is true. Now, so what's happened is the bill itself, there's two places that have caused concern, and they haven't just caused concern to us, they've caused concern to the legal fraternity and others. And it is the pre-recording of evidence by the victim, and it is the threshold at which the sexual relationship between the victim and the perpetrator is admissible in court. So those are the two things that are causing concern at the moment. New Zealand First we don't have a member on that select committee. So we don't have a member that sat through all of the submissions. And that's just a numbers game. We've only got 9 people, 4 of us are ministers, and we're not allowed to sit on select committees. So where we're at now is, and I spoke, as soon as these concerns were raised with us by the legal profession, I went and saw Andrew Little, whose bill it is, and then sat down with him and Jan Logie and said, look, Jan, I now need time because I have to read through all of the submissions. I mean, the Law Commission's submission is 300 pages alone in its own right. I have to read through all the submissions. I have to get whatever advice you've got that I can have, Jan, from your office, so that I can go with a one-pager to the New Zealand First Caucus and say, okay, these are the concerns, this is the information I've been able to pull together, and this is my recommended position for New Zealand First. So it's, you know, it's not about holding something up. It's about making sure that when you make a law that is this law is really, really important. This is around innocent till proven guilty. This is around the evidence that has been able to use in a defence. So the purpose of the bill, absolutely we support, trying to minimise the trauma of those that have been victims of sexual violence.
Mm.
That's the purpose of the bill. At the same time, though, you have to make sure that an innocent person would be able to defend themselves. So that's what I'm trying to work my way through now.
Yeah. So the concerns that you've raised and the way that it has been, I suppose, reported in the media, is its impact on fair trial rights. And you've just described, right, in the sense that that is ultimately about an innocent person being able to prove their innocence. But at the moment, what we're seeing is that only 13% of rape prosecutions are successful, and only 15% of allegations even get to court. So there's already a massive, you know, unfairness at play, and this was supposed to sort of go towards making that more balanced.
I don't disagree, actually. I don't disagree. I've actually had conversations with other colleagues, in other parties inside government, both with the opposition and with members of the government parties. Those statistics, in my view, those statistics show that there's more systematic issues than just this. So if you just said that only 15% even get there, what's going on? What's going on before things get to court? Now, I've got lawyers that say to me that actually the police are putting too many cases through without the appropriate evidence or without the appropriate background, and that's why so many fail when they get to court. Mm. Now, that may be true. I don't know, because this is, again, not my area of expertise, but I do tend to be the person for New Zealand First who ends up in... But yeah, so I actually think there are more issues at play here than just that. But right now I'm going to focus on this piece of legislation. I'm doing it as fast as I can because I understand how important this is.
Mm.
So this is not New Zealand First. Sometimes we get portrayed as, oh, you're just throwing your toys out of the cot because, you're misogynist or you're whatever, whatever. This is actually really important law. I need to have confidence that I'm not creating a worse situation if we go ahead and change these. So I'm just looking for that confidence. Mm.
So, but at the moment then, do you personally have any issue with those, one and two issues that have been raised? I mean, the second one being the threshold of evidence that can be used about the complainant's sexual disposition. I mean, anecdotally, right, you do have people saying they're not going to make a complaint, a formal one. They're not going to go through with that legal process simply because they don't want to be hung up and, they go through your sexual history. We've seen this.
I understand it. I mean, when I was sitting down and listening, because I've sat down and spoken to lawyers and so on and so forth about their concerns, the case that came into my mind when we were talking about the relevance of a sexual history between the partners is Peter Plumley Walker, actually, because there's a case that there's a situation where there was a consensual, relationship going on between these two individuals that wasn't necessarily your straight-out vanilla sex, right? And so in a certain context, you can see how an accident could happen and a person could die, right? Accidentally, not meant to be killed in a certain context. It's what happens after that actually in the Peter Plumley Walker case became murder. So I actually don't know the outcome of that case, sorry. I don't know whether I've used the right phrase because how there's lots of different legal nuances there. So, forgive me, anybody, if I've said the wrong, used the wrong word at the end there. I'm just trying to use it simplistically. But so I can understand how context can make a difference. What I find, and I think the media's got some, I think the media has a role in this, where they fixate on those issues, particularly around female victims, and they report them in a shock, horror and awe type of a way, as if that is what's important, as opposed to this person was killed, and regardless of what their sexual history is, this person shouldn't be killed, right? So I think that, and the judges have the right to suppress that. So again, I don't think it's quite as simple as these two issues. I think there are multiple players here who could take more responsibility.
Absolutely, and probably more that needs to change, right? But do you fundamentally see how these two things might be a step towards a fairer process for the victim?
Oh, yeah, no, I fundamentally see that. It's about the balance between the victim and a person who is innocent until proven guilty. So I absolutely get it. Don't get me wrong, Lillian. We support the intent. I just need to make sure what I've got to prove to my caucuses that we aren't tipping the balance, the scales of justice, one way or another. That there must be, I'm sure there must be a middle road here, where you know, we cannot re-victimise the victim, but at the same time ensure that a person is innocent until proven guilty.
I just want to add here that I also asked the minister when she does think she's going to get this done so it can go ahead, and she says she's trying to do it as quickly as possible. She's meeting with two key people this week.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire.